Lindsay Dane, thank you so much for taking your time to come onto the Hear Us Out podcast to chat about your book, I'm Getting a Cochlear Implant, Learn About How I'll Hear. Why don't you give us and our listeners some background about yourself and what inspired you to write this children's book?
Okay, so I got my master's in deaf education with an emphasis in speech and audiology, and I came into it as an early childhood educator. I didn't have any speech or communication disorder background at all. I was just a teacher who liked sign language, who wanted to learn how to teach children who were deaf. And I went and looked at the school, Washington University, and their program was amazing. I didn't know anything about cochlear implants or any of that. So I was accepted into the program. And when I started, of course, I was a baby. I had no medical terminology classes or anything like that. So it was really, really hard for me because I didn't understand any of the words that they were saying. And so I finally understood how the ear worked and the parts of the ear. And being a simple-minded person and an early childhood person, the way that I explain it to other people is with little bones, like dog bones and a piano, because that's how I see it. So years ago, I had this idea to write a book about how I see it and make it easier for other people. And now that I'm a mom, you know, if I was to go to the doctor's office and then tell me this isn't working, you know, your child is deaf, wait, what? You know, I would instantly be deer in the headlights, right? And you can't understand everything that they're saying. So I can't imagine trying to learn all of that stuff at the same time as being a parent and trying to help my child and understand what's going on with my child. So anyway, that's the reason why I wrote it, is so hopefully it will help parents understand all the things that they don't understand in the doctor's office. And my role as an educator, the deaf education program was to be the bridge between parents and doctors. So I don't teach children who are deaf and hard of hearing, but my book is how I'm teaching.
It's interesting that you say that about the information being difficult to understand, and you don't necessarily get everything from your doctor when you go to an appointment and they're explaining things. We've had that conversation with multiple people that we've sat down to speak with, whether it's a parent whose child is just identified with hearing loss, whether it's somebody with tinnitus. It's very common for patients to be overwhelmed when they're getting the information that something isn't right. So to have a way to break that down, to have a way for that information to be accessible for people is really, it's a nice thing. I think it's a very noble reason for doing what you're doing, to make that information accessible for people to help understand what's going on with their ear when there is hearing loss.
Well, good. My goal, I have a couple of goals in mind. You know, if you look at my book, there's a story piece and then there's a science piece. So the story piece is basically for children to go into like a general education classroom and be like, hey, this thing on my head, I'm going to share with you what it is. This is who I am, you know, and be able to share with general educators and their hearing peers and stuff. But then the science part is more for the parents than for the kids, you know, or any adult who's going to be working with that child so that they can understand how they work and how the child is different, but not really. There's not a big difference at all. But it might seem like it when all these words are being thrown at you that you don't understand.
I'm curious about the selecting CI to be the main point of the book over hearing aids versus hearing in general, how you made that decision.
I wanted to talk about all kinds of different hearing losses and what that means and what the different types of devices are available, so that anybody who gets this book, whether they have a cochlear implant or not, will get some information out of it. Even people who are hearing, it explains how typical hearing works too.
You'd mentioned getting to see an activation. I teach in an undergrad program in our state, and one of our patients was willing to have their activation done in the classroom. So it was a patient who was a teacher, and she did her activation in front of 45 people. It was a wildly interesting experience for everybody. And this patient was perfect for it because she was comfortable in front of a group and was comfortable talking about her experience to the students. And then the students also got to see, well, what does a clinician do in this appointment? How does the clinician speak to the patient to make the information accessible? How does the clinician interact with this new sensory information that the patient is getting? And it's not always easy for the patient when they're experiencing their cochlear implant for the first time. It very often doesn't sound good to them. And we need to help them navigate that process and guide them along and let them know, hey, this is normal. This is what we expect. We don't necessarily expect you to walk away from this appointment understanding speech clearly, but we're trying to wake up your nerve and get your nerve stimulated. And it's such an interesting thing for people to get an understanding of, because I think the public at large has no real idea about this.
No, well, I reached out to one of my friends who does teach in a program for the deaf, and I asked her, like, what things are missing? What kinds of information should I share in addition to this book? And I haven't done anything yet, but she's like, one of the things that people don't understand is just because you get a cochlear implant, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden you hear correctly, you know, or if you wear it for 2 hours a day, there's going to be success. She's like, one of the things that I want my parents to know is they need to be wearing it all the time if possible, you know, and it takes a lot of training, and it's not like an instant thing. Have more information to share with people, because you just don't know.
Yeah, we tell our patients that we are helping you retrain your brain to hear differently. And you had mentioned the hair cells before, and those hair cells within the cochlea are typically what are damaged when a patient winds up getting a cochlear implant. And a healthy ear is going to have thousands of hair cells. And you could think of those hair cells like keys on a piano. A cochlear implant is going to have an electrode array that has 22 electrodes. So think of that like 22 keys on a piano to play songs with versus thousands of hair cells, each one of them being a key of a piano to make really rich sound. So the sound coming out of a cochlear implant is different than the sound that's a normal acoustic hearing ear. But the thing for our patient is that they can hear. It's different, but they can hear in a way that they just could not before that procedure was done and the activation was done. So it's something for us to be on the clinician end of it is really, really rewarding work, because we're helping reconnect people to verbal communication. And it's one of the most enjoyable parts of our job, at least for me.
Well, in my story, one of the things I talk about is there's a little man in the seashell, and there's a piano in there, and the little man plays the piano, and he plays lightning fast. But whenever the little girl gets her cochlear implant, the cochlear implant plays the piano, but he plays lightning slow, and he has big hands. And whenever I think about explaining that, it makes me think, you remember the Hamburger Helper hand a long time ago with those big fingers? Yeah.
I like that.
That's what I imagine the cochlear implant looks like. You know, it's not going to sound the same. But something else, I was speaking to an audiologist, and I was asking her all kinds of questions. And she said that she asks her patients, well, what do you want to hear? You know, I can program your device to hear what you want. If you are interested in speech and you just want to hear, you know, emergency sounds, for example, then I can program it to do that. You know, and I know that's not always the goal of a cochlear implant, but I think that that matters too. I think people need to know you get to decide what you want, and then we can try to help you get there.
So in what you're describing there sounds to me like somebody who maybe has a severe to profound hearing loss, and they're using hearing aids where they may not have access to speech, that the cochlea and the nerve for hearing aren't functioning in a way that speech is going to be clear, but they can get awareness of sounds in the environment. So emergency sounds that, hey, you can safely cross the street with your hearing aids on, or you can be a little bit more connected to what's going on, even though you may not be hearing speech clearly. So understanding from our patients, hey, what do you need? What is it that you're missing? How can we best get you there? That I think is something that if you're doing this work right, you're incorporating that into the interactions to really understand what is your patient need. But then also, I would say from the clinician end, that we need to be realistic in letting our patients know what their expectations can be. Can what you are seeking be done? Can it be done with the devices that you're getting? And we can't always meet our patient's expectation. And certainly when it comes to cochlear implants, we try and have those expectations really low in the beginning, because we want our patients to adopt the technology and understand it's a process. It's not something they can just put on and they're going to hear great right away. You're talking about a months-long process to get to a point where you're going to get to your peak performance. So it takes a lot of work from the clinician. It takes a lot of work from the patient. And it takes an understanding of what those devices can do. So the clinician needs to help the patient have realistic expectations. We need to inform our patients about what the devices can do and hopefully guide our patients' expectations to be realistic to what those devices can do. So that's certainly something we're talking about with our patients to make sure they get what they need. Where are you distributing the book other than Amazon? Where can people access it?
So I have a website called hislittlelightofmine.com. Books are available on Amazon. I'm also going through another self-publisher called Ingram Spark. And so libraries can buy from Ingram Spark. Book companies can buy from there. I also work with like individual stores, and I can buy what's called author copies from the back end of Amazon, and I can get them at a cheaper price for me. So then I can sell them wholesale to a retailer, and then they can sell them at a higher price. So there's lots of different ways you can get it. Actually, before I went to school to be a deaf educator, I had a little girl in my class who was deaf. And they told me, okay, we're going to put this little microphone around your neck and it's going to connect to her ears and it's going to help her to hear. And I was, oh, okay, I'll do that. And I did it sometimes, but not all the time. I didn't understand the value. I didn't really understand what the FM system was and why it was so important for me to use it. And so, you know, general educators, I mean, they don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Do you feel like your personal experience with having that deaf child in your class helped you when writing this book?
Well, for sure, because I did her a disservice. I didn't know, but I didn't understand the value of the devices that she had.
What is the response from parents, children, professionals? What has their response been when reading this book?
Well, everybody seems to learn something, which makes me very happy. I've had reviews. I've reached out to different people to get reviews. Most of the people, I really haven't gotten any negative feedback, except for I got one review on Amazon that said she was disappointed that it didn't discuss the surgery. It didn't talk about the surgery. So now, like on my Amazon description and on my website, I have all these questions. Does it do this? Does it do that? You know, and it tells you what it does and what it doesn't do. So I don't talk about sign language. I don't talk about the surgery. I don't talk about what is right and what's wrong. These are just this is all the information, and this might be good for you and it may not be. You know, I tried for it not to be biased at all, because I don't want to shame anyone. You know, should my child read this if they don't have a cochlear implant? Yeah, because they'll understand how their hearing works. Or should, you know, my child read this if they don't have any hearing loss? Yeah, it should, you know, because you'll learn about other people who are not like you, but then you'll also learn about the workings of your ear too.
And I don't think it necessarily warrants going into the specifics of the surgery and what's actually done. I don't know if that's a necessary route for it.
No, not for kids, but it talks about what sound is, how hearing works, what is hearing loss, the different types of hearing loss, the different types of hearing aids, and why you would have one over the other. Talks about the audiogram, very basics of the audiogram and the speech banana, so that parents understand, okay, the goal of the doctors is to try to get their hearing up above the speech banana so that we can get many of the speech sounds. I mean, there's just so many words that are hard, and I don't know.
It's almost a very good counseling tool with parents of illustrating the speech banana and how where children should be hearing versus where they might actually be hearing there, and the different types of hearing loss, whether it's something that's fluid related or sensory neural, which doesn't reverse itself. There's a lot in there that could be very useful for professionals, parents, kids, everybody really, I think, could learn from this.
I hope so. That is my hope. I can't imagine anybody reading it and not learning something. Even you know, professionals, they might be able to learn how to say it in a different way. You know, I went to the audiologist with my husband, and the doctor was very knowledgeable, and he knew everything that he was talking about. Unfortunately, I did too, you know, but my husband doesn't know all that stuff, you know, and I think sometimes people are really good at what they're good at. I'm really good at making things that are complicated easy to understand. I'm not good at surgery or any of that kind of stuff, you know, so we don't have all the strength. So if you don't have a strength, you know, I just think it'd be so helpful in any way. And then people can read it as many times as they want. Okay, what is sensory neural? What? How do I say that? How do I say cochlea? You know, there's just so much information that I really think would be helpful if the right people knew about it.
So why don't you tell everybody all the exact details of the book, where they can get it, where they can reach out to you so that they have it all in one spot?
Okay. So you can go on Amazon and you can buy the paperback or the hardback on Amazon. There's also an ebook version. Books are online. You can listen to them on YouTube.
Any other exciting projects you're currently working on?
Oh, yes. I have so many things. So I have 5 children's picture books, but I also make personalized books. So I make this book for a teacher, which, of course, I'm a teacher and I love personalized things. And so I make it specific for the teacher. So I put their name on the cover and I can put a picture inside and a special message. Because I make the whole book, I can make it however I want. So that's really fun. I also have journals. I have Bible verse handwriting books. I'm working on a new Christmas conversation starter book that I'm fixing to release. Oh, and that's a Texas word, fixing. Yeah. I'm working on an ASL word search book. So instead of looking for the letters in English, I guess it's
Clever.
Yeah.
That's so very clever.
I have so many projects going. I'm working on an ASL ABC book. I don't know if I said that. That's in the works right now. I hope to make a number one too. I have lots of things going on. Many ideas.
Well, we're excited to check it out. We will be staying tuned to the upcoming projects that you'll be releasing.